man, like you paid 10 grand to learn some skills.
Yeah.
What you don't realize is like what the real value is the WhatsApp group that your class, that like whoever's that person in the class who always organized lunch or something, every class had that person, whoever that person is, the WhatsApp group that they're going to put together with, like, you know, the 9 or 16 of you or however big the class size was, like, that's really what you're getting out of it. Funny enough, right? Because I guess, could you learn skills online for free? Yes. But man, it's hard to make friends. It's hard to make friends with similar interests who support each other, who have a shared experience.
Hey everyone, welcome back to our mini-series here at the Collab Collective podcast called Aftermath Life After Red, where we catch up with former staff and students and follow up on their stories since their time at Red Academy. I'm your host, Josh, and today we have Leo Calagaro back with us as my co-host to interview Chris Kavalowski. Chris was the digital marketing instructor at Red Academy and one of the few who have taught at both locations in Vancouver and Toronto. In this episode, we talk about the differences and similarities between the East Coast and West Coast locations and also talk a little bit about how he started his own podcast while at Red. We also talk about the elements of what makes a strong community, like having that shared experience in a cohort, and discuss how remote learning can adapt to create that similar effect. This was a packed episode full of energy and juicy insights. So please enjoy this episode in the aftermath. Hey everyone, welcome to the Collab Collective podcast. Today we have Leo back as our co-host and he's brought on Chris Kowalski. A lot of people know who Chris is, but if you can tell us who you are, the role you had at Red, and what role are you currently at right now?
You bet. Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And I guess Leo, thanks for thinking of me.
Of course.
I'm in digital marketing, case in point, for sure. That's kind of my career path right now. I think I've cemented it at last as I approach 30. Finally, I can say I'm something. And at Red, I was teaching the digital marketing course. So that was like, above all, like a formative experience for me, for sure. But yeah, I was teaching the courses out in Vancouver. I'm originally from Toronto. I taught at both campuses. And then was it working on the commercial side just towards the end of it as well. So I guess it's my fault that everything went the way it did. Because I joined that end of the business outside of like the actual on-campus like operations. And then everything went belly up. So what can you do?
Right. And what role are you currently doing right now?
Right. So I'm currently in a role that I've been kind of chasing for a couple of years, and actually like Red really helped me sort of iron out my skill set to get it. So I'm the CRO and digital marketing manager at Touch Bistro, is a currently a Toronto-based company. So they specialize, it's like a SaaS company. They specialize in restaurant kind of point of sale stuff.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, as well as kind of a whole they've got like a small growing catalog of products as well in that space.
Awesome. Fantastic. Leo, do you got some questions you want to like kick us off?
Yeah, I mean, thanks again for having me back. Really like the little theme of the show where you're on it and then you get to be a host. So Chris, the spotlight's going to be on you soon enough.
Passing the baton, yeah.
Just pass it down. I mean, let's hear a little bit more about Touch Bistro. So it seems like something you were chasing for a bit. I'm curious, have you seen the office at all? Or I guess you're just fully remote?
Fully remote. No, I stepped in the office on my very first day just to pick up my laptop. Not a soul in there. It looked like it was such a clean, like sterile, just like all white surfaces, kind of a brand new empty office. It was like purgatory on some daytime TV show. Yeah.
I've been there for a couple startup nights over here in Toronto, and I actually had a couple people, a couple friends in there. And yeah, it's a wicked space, some really cool little office. I mean, it's a shame that can't enjoy it, but hopefully one day.
Mm-hmm. I don't know the timeline of this, but I wonder if you were at the old one or I think just around the time when COVID started, I think they're moving into a new office space.
Oh, no way. So I went to the also King downtown, Street one.
So it probably wasn't for, I don't think it's on King Street. So
sorry, not King Street, over on Richmond was the old one above a couple, I can't remember what coffee shop name, but really cool spot.
That's really cool. Well, judging by kind of the like the size of the new space from what I have seen, which again is that one visit and mostly like HR passing around Google slide decks of like, this is what it'll look like when you get there. Here's a coffee spot. You can make a little cappuccino. It looks like they were going for that same kind of size and like space that they could continue to do events like Startup Nights. So I'm sure if and when we have the opportunity, that'll be a thing.
So why were you eyeing it for a few years? Was it like, do they like the clients are the clients like really special, or was it just a type of work that they do? What was it that made you?
As an organization, like they definitely stuck out to me in the last couple of years, just as like a mature tech company in an industry that I have sort of like a background and familiarity with. So I was bartending for years. Mm. Yeah. While doing, you know, any other number of kind of side hustles and kind of other things and between professional jobs. So I was doing a lot of bartending downtown. So it seemed like a really good kind of natural intersection of my marketing experience and of course that. But really what I've been, the part that I was kind of trying to touch on about that I've been working towards for a couple of years was more in terms of the role itself. So CRO, I guess if anyone's listening that doesn't know, like it's really this cool sort of baby of digital marketing slash like analytics, though all digital marketers should have some sort of fundamental knowledge in analytics really UX more than anything. Not to say that like, oh, it's both combined. It's just kind of borrowing elements of each in a marriage to do something that is like really, really linear in a sense, in the way that it directly maps to like success of the organization. Like it's really easy to, on a week to week basis, kind of reflect and say, oh yeah, like I'm definitely making an impact, moving the needle. So that's been tremendous for me, because it's definitely, I've been in roles where maybe it's more of like a content thing where, you know, you're contributing, but it's difficult. It's not so black and white. Like you're contributing to overall brand presence and the kind of visual, I guess, you know, a lot of the other kind of visual stuff where, you know, you're doing the right thing and you know, it's the right move for the business, but it's not as easy to empiricize. And, I kind of appreciate that now at this stage in my career.
So CRO stands for Chief Revenue Officer.
That actually probably is going to come to everyone's mind first. It didn't cross mine, or I would have said it. So a conversion rate optimization. So
it's another CRO.
Yeah,
totally different. It's interesting in that as a conversion optimization, you know, person, manager, whatever,
right,
like, basically I'm not the channel owner for any individual kind of part of the marketing. So I'm not managing I'm not like the sole owner of, you know, the advertising or the email or anything like that. But I do get to touch on everything. And on a day-to-day basis, I'm basically mapping user flows and just trying to get a sense of, and kind of applying conversion rates is I guess the namesake of the role to each touch point, to each step, to each kind of field form fill, to each submit push slash like getting the next email, like every single step, like cool, how many people are we losing along the way? And that's kind of how the funnel works, right? Speaking general marketing terms.
So it's all about the conversion funnel.
It really, really, really is. And like, where else are people going and what are they trying to get done, you know, elsewhere? And cool, how can like the regular like UX team and our kind of customer success people make that a pleasant experience for them, but also how do more people do the part that makes money? So that's where it becomes kind of like, okay, now you're just the money guy and you're evil sales and marketing, to villainize it a little bit. Right. But, you know, I like it because it takes a lot of different things into account. So it lets me flex a lot of muscles in any given day.
Gotta use those tactics. That's for sure.
Gotta pay the bills at the end of the day. Right.
Yeah. Keep the lights on or whatever they say. Right. KTLOs.
Keep the lights on in that fancy office we can't use.
So how did you guys meet? Like, can you share the story of like when you guys first locked eyes and then knew that you were best friends forever?
I mean, I guess it's not the longest one. I mean, it kind of, you know, short lived, of course, with, you know, the obvious that kind of happened. But Technically, Chris was working for Red far longer than I was. It's just, he came back to Toronto and basically settled right in as if there was no difference, which was awesome. And we were actually kind of classroom mates at some point right across the hall. So a lot of waving, a lot of collaborations for a few things as soon as we started, a lot of fun things in between. But I think Chris is kind of the better one to explain that, just because he was just a little bit, more with Red at that point.
Yeah, there's no overstating the sheer magnitude of the immediate romance and chemistry between Leo and I. So there was coffee pot talk. Yeah, you get to know each other in your role. But I'll tell you something. I'll like brown nose a bit. Like my first impressions and all that coming from the Vancouver campus, that in Red Academy's case was the flagship. It was there a little bit longer. It was established. It was a bigger space as well. Mm-hmm. There was more help going around, and it wasn't as bootstrappy and startup-y, though it was those things, as the Toronto campus. Like, I'll say that there were definitely luxuries at the Vancouver campus that Toronto didn't have. And so coming to Toronto campus, like, I immediately took note of two things. One was, wow, damn, like, these people are really under-supported. And two, damn, they're way happier somehow. And like a big standout of that was Leo. And he, the one thing that like really stood out to me about Leo was, okay, when I see Leo hanging out with a bunch of students, I can't tell whether or not he's a student. And that's a good sign, 100%. It's not that you like look like a student. I mean, you look very youthful, like hats off, but what's your skincare routine? More so in the way that you're just getting along, just hanging out, it's just a group of colleagues to you, that kind of level of professionalism that doesn't create sort of like a barrier of an instructor, and there's a divide, it's like an us versus them sort of thing. And you know, the sage on a stage kind of cliche of the professor talking down to his students. Like that didn't exist at all in like your demeanor, disposition, even just the way that you, like I said, the way you just like handled yourself and spoke with them. You're always as eager to learn from them as they were from you. And I hope that I approached the role the same way. And I can't say that's a universal skill that people have. I think some people are just able to kind of do that, and you develop a level of trust that actually, in the grand scheme of things, deeply contributes to learning and the long-term retention of like new skills for people. So just by being a nice guy, you're kind of automatically a better teacher. That sounds like I'm oversimplifying it, but I do feel that way. And I thought that was you.
Oh, I think that's a huge point. And like, I mean, I definitely say that you had that same kind of demeanor with your students in a lot of ways. I know your class was typically a lot larger than mine, but it's a lot different in the way that we kind of approach it. And, you know, a lot of the times we're sitting with our students, not in front of them. We're not really lecturing at them. We're kind of working with them or flipping the tables and letting them kind of take the reins. I think it goes to show like how much autonomy we had, maybe too much over in Toronto. Like we did have a lot of fun and definitely a lot less guidance than the things I would hear over in Vancouver. But because of that, you know, we were able to grab a drink with our students after class, or I don't even know if I'm allowed to say that, but I don't really care anymore, I guess, at this point. But, it's a small relationship formed from those experiences that I think go so much further when you take things back to the classroom. And I think we got to like break the rules a little bit. So, I mean, that's something that I definitely saw you do, which was awesome. Something that I did, something that, some of our other instructors got the opportunity to do. But I think it just kind of helped the whole, Toronto kind of cozy vibe in our little like niche basement of a, of a school that was just so overly friendly, but at the same time, like, a safe space for a lot of people. So I think because of that, we were able to do those things. You know, it was a lot less formal. We would flip the classrooms around all the time. I always noticed in your class, you never ever had like, traditional rows or anything like that. It was always like the big U. And then I remember at one point you had the big mean board table, which was a fun one for those class discussions.
Mm-hmm. And that, you know what, it's funny you say that, because that was in part, that was kind of student led. And we're getting into kind of in the weeds of like, oh, how did you conduct the classroom, which I know is not necessarily the juiciest way for this conversation to head. But it's funny because the way that we used to set up the tables, whether it was a U or the, I guess, the boardroom table or the I, as we called it, that was all kind of decided by the students at the beginning of each cohort. In another colleague of mine, so obviously, you know, RJ was the digital marketing instructor there in Toronto before I came and joined. And one of the first things we would do is we'd have a new class kind of do some icebreakers, blah, 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 and get to know each other, and then put together sort of like they would brand themselves as an agency. And so they would name the agency whatever they want. And then they would set the table arrangement. And when given the opportunity to like spend 30 minutes, debate amongst themselves, even research like what's the most optimal workplace setting in terms of table arrangement, they kind of always ended up leaning towards those two shapes. So yeah, that was never like, you know, I guess it was intentional, but it was never like prescribed by any of the instructors. And maybe it's an interesting little social experiment.
Break the mold.
Nice. Okay. So Chris, when you started at Red, was it in Vancouver or was it in Toronto first and then you went to Vancouver and then came back?
Kind of both. I interviewed in Toronto. Okay. And I did my orientation sort of like sitting in on classes in Toronto. That was with an instructor who didn't stick around much later after I started. And then I started formally having my own classroom in Vancouver. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. So yeah, how did that start? Like, was that your first teaching role? And how did you find out about it?
Yeah. So originally I was looking for a part-time role, and then they said, oh, we kind of have this full-time thing in Vancouver.
Okay.
And it appealed to me because I guess I'd been in management roles before. So I'd have kind of, there's one organization that I worked in where I had a couple of interns. There was a previous role, which was less marketing, but it was just like a restaurant role where, really I was waiting tables, but eventually I was like supervising. And so that kind of like element of coaching, whatever the sort of circumstances were, I felt like I personally got a lot out of it. I felt like there was a lot I could personally offer to that kind of thing. Mm. And eventually I ended up coaching, but this was, I guess it's applicable, but I was coaching like kids, like 8-year-olds, and up, in Mississauga playing, football. And it was very nice. They had a jacket with my name on it and everything. I was living the,
nice. The coach, the Chris,
the USA, suburb dad dream. And I got a lot out of it, I gotta say. In that particular case, like I look back on it, I'm like, oh man, it was like full contact, full pads. These kids are 9. Like maybe that wasn't the play. So I, you know, I have feelings about that. But one thing I never was, you know, one thing that's always been clear to me was that I wanted to be in some kind of coaching role, helping kind of get somebody ready for something at some point. I don't know. It's always been sort of an intrinsic way that I've felt fulfilled. I don't know.
Gotcha. And so when did you first move to Vancouver? Because I know I met you when I did my program, the UX program, end of 2018. And that's when we did the office parody video, which was good times.
Killer. That was so money. That's still my favorite. Still one of my top 3 favorite things to come out of that whole organization.
Oh yeah. It made it to Toronto. It was definitely a sight to see.
Yeah, it was nice. A viral sensation. I was in Van probably, I think I came in like, April, maybe earlier, April that year. Might have been April 2018, maybe 2017. It's kind of all blurring together now. But okay, I was only there for a good couple of cohorts prior to you coming in. I think for sure that year, probably the cohort before you came,
right.
I took the part-time UX and UI. It was kind of a perk of working. If you teach during the day, you can take the night classes for free. And it's like, hell yeah.
Right.
Why would I not do this?
Okay, cool. Very nice. And then I remember you starting like the Red podcast too. I was too busy to get involved with that. But yeah, could you like share a little bit on like the whole process? Because I'm sure you went through the whole strategy of like how to put together a podcast. And maybe I'd like to learn a little bit on your thinking behind that.
Oh man. Okay. So I did love that. I got a lot out of doing that. For me, it was like, it was a learning thing. It's like, oh, if I ever wanted to do this seriously, for future project, I'd love to have an opportunity to kind of learn to do it. Now, as with many things, it's like, oh, if you can find the opportunity to carve out some space in a role where, you know, if you're trying to pay the bills, like where you are getting paid and you can kind of learn something while you're there, like, why would you not? Right. As opposed to doing it on your own time. So it's definitely for me, it was like a little bit opportunistic. But the main value that I thought we could drive was kind of twofold, where I felt one, we have sort of an admissions team that is like trying to be as creative as possible. And this was at three campuses at the time, Toronto, Vancouver, and in London, the UK, where they're trying to be as creative as possible to communicate and capture like the stories of people who went through the programs and, you know, their lives, either some quicker than others, but like, you know, changed, right? Their professional careers either like completely pivoted or like just were start beginning to bud and exploded. And like, how do you capture that, right? It's really a huge experience. And, you know, there's only so many testimonials you can kind of write and read to somebody before you realize that's not the most effective way to do it. Mm. So that was one of the things. So I wanted to capture those stories and make them available in a place where either alumni could share them, or it could be maybe just like a keepsake, a little bit of like a memory for the people that I did get to speak with. And two, that the admissions team could share. And I guess even like the marketing team. Mm. I wasn't thinking about them too much at the time because they were based in Toronto and I was obviously at the Vancouver school. But those are sort of the main two things. I think earlier in the kind of ideation of it all, I vaguely remember being in a bit of like a, not a board meeting, but there was like an all hands sort of the team at Vancouver, and the idea was flowing around. And I said, hey, I'm going to do this. I'm going to own it. You know, who wants to help? And a few people were saying, oh, it should be like thought leadership, which like later just became this like toxic buzzword that everyone hated. we should just talk about like, you know, all the newest tech stuff and blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, but I don't know if people are going to look to us as a resource for that necessarily, given that, you know, we were one of several and now many, but at the time, well, I guess one of the first like emerging full scale, you know, tech boot camps. So if we were going to like pump money into it and like get it out there into the world and get, you know, famous guests, like for sure. But if one instructor is going to run it part time on the side, I don't know that that's the play. So I decided to go much more in like the student story route.
Okay. Were you trying to figure out? Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say because of that, and like, and it was actually something I listened to when I first started at Red. I remember Agnes just telling me like, hey, we have this little like Red, what was it called again, Chris?
Oh, so it was one of those things where we had a poll and we let the students name it, or the student body or the alarm or whoever. And the network named it Red.io.
Radio,
radio, like radio, but red.
That's what I thought. I was like, was it Red Radio or Radio? But I mean, beside that, like, I remember Agnes just told me, like, you know, a student, an instructor over in Vancouver is doing one of these. Like, you know, it just opened my eyes to like how much is possible at Red and how much autonomy we had. But the approach you went was just so authentic, and I think, you know, having that voice for our students was just so much more powerful than like, you know, like a, just like a traditional like tech talk or, you know, just a curriculum kind of show off type of situation. So like, I remember listening to a couple episodes like right away. And I just thought like such a great opportunity because like you said, like we honestly really did change a lot of people's lives, whether it was in the short term or the long term, or, you know, brought their own ideas to life, or if they were able to just kind of like pivot out of maybe a toxic career, or, you know, eventually take that idea into fruition by picking up some skills, especially on the DM, DM side. I think it just goes to show like how much of a legacy we kind of left, even if it wasn't intended.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, before we go like patting ourselves on the back the whole way through, I know there's people who have like a healthy level of cynicism and skepticism around boot camps. And it's like, well, we're not oblivious to the fact that, yes, also there were people who came through, and whether it was like just their attitude towards the whole thing, their commitment to their program or a lack thereof, you know, no doubt there's people who go through boot camps and get nothing out of it.
Yeah, it's not for
everyone. I think that's important to say, because every ounce of content that I see or hear around boot camps seems to always be coming from people who are like at the point of delivery or commercially involved in one of those businesses. And it's like, no, yeah, boot camps can fail 100%. If you're not in for it, if you can't make the time commitment, if you don't see the bigger picture, like, yeah, okay, you're not going to get anything out of it. And no, even the best instructor couldn't probably have helped you. But yeah, I guess that's the same for everything, right? And I think with degrees, we're so, as a culture, we're so fine with saying, yeah, of course, most people get a degree and don't pursue that as a career path. Most people get a degree and maybe it doesn't necessarily do something for them, right? if not most, then many, right? And we're very comfortable with that. But when it comes to boot camps, we're like, oh, there, it's a scam, and how dare they? It's like, wait, hold on, wait, like, you gotta come with, you gotta make something out of it, right? There's a kind of an element of alchemy that needs to come from the student. But yeah, overall, you're like, just to get back to the positives, yeah, totally transformative for the people who did, right? The people who were all in. And sometimes it's almost like a chicken or the egg thing. And Leo, tell me if you ever had this. This is such like a fun thing to say, because I would never say this while I was working there. But sometimes I think to myself, the people who like came through like my class, the program that like I helped build, like informed a lot of the curriculum, like they went on and some of them have fantastic jobs. Would they have just been fine without us? Like, are they just that good? Like, was their talent just raw, so strong that they would have watched a couple of YouTube videos and done the tutorials and they would have been in the same place? I think about that.
Think about it all the time too. And like, honestly, I've had one of my first students, she's gone on to work. She's working for Canadian Tire right now. And I always kind of ask myself, I was like, why is she here? Like, she can honestly design circles around me. She's got like 10 years of agency experience. And for her, it was different. Like, she just kind of needed that, she was looking for more of like a community. She was looking to just, you know, refresh some of her skills, but you know, she already had those design skills, for example. But I always think of that, like, would they have been fine without us? Like, absolutely. Could they have learned it themselves? For sure. But would they still have had that, like, you know, community aspect? Would they still have, like, again, it's a shame that like Red isn't there to kind of fall back on now, but you know, she was one of my first students. So she had that, like, you know, year of kind of coaching and coming back in all the time. And I don't know how much she even really needed it as much to how much she wanted it. And she just wanted to, you know, have like a little bit of a sense of belonging. She was out of school for so long where she had a little bit of imposter syndrome, but in terms of like skills, like they were all there. And again, like, I think I've had that situation like more than once, but I always think they do take something away from it. Whether it be those tangible skills, like learning a new software or making friends. Honestly, like, I've had so many students that are, you know, new immigrants to Toronto or just Canada in general. And like, you know, think Toronto's a big, scary city. And then, you know, I have so many students that have messaged me and literally said, like, you know, I was kind of considering like going back home until I went to Red, which is huge for me, because it got him, you know, Toronto's again, like that big city, kind of eat you alive type of thing. And it gave him a little community to kind of bounce back on. And I think that goes a long way.
Man, I do like the way you put that, in that, yeah, that is funny, because sometimes people finish the course and I thought, oh, man, like, you paid 10 grand to learn some skills.
Yeah.
But what you don't realize is like what the real value is the WhatsApp group that your class, that like whoever's that person in the class who always organized lunch or something, every class had that person, whoever that person is, the WhatsApp group that they're going to put together with, like, you know, the 9 or 16 of you, or however big the class size was. That's really what you're getting out of it. Funny enough, right? Because I guess, could you learn skills online for free? Yes. But man, it's hard to make friends. And it's hard to make friends with similar interests who support each other, who have a shared experience. You can't buy that for 10 grand. There's a reason Bumble Friends is not a feature that people are excited to use. Like, it's got to happen organically, you know? There can't be like a pre-screening involved. It has to be day one, you're in class, you look around, you're like, who are these people? And 3 months later, you know, that's who you're getting referrals from if you're looking to freelance, or you know, who's competing, really against you at the end of the day. But it always felt like with you, because we'd often have like multiple students from one cohort, all in consideration for one job, and they'd all be interviewing for it. And there was at least one occasion, actually two I can think of, both in Vancouver, where I had at least two students, yeah, going for the same job, and they ended up hiring them both. So that's kind of cool. Yeah.
So I think experiences like that, like, are so valuable. And I feel like a lot of people, especially coming into boot camps, and like you said, like, there are people where it's not for them. They don't necessarily have the commitment. They didn't go in with the right mindset. But I think there's just like a little bit of a sense of, you know, being vulnerable and kind of having that shared similar experience. And when you're doing that with someone, especially when you're out of school for like 10, 15 years, for example, or, you know, lack of school completely, you're coming straight out of high school. And we have quite a few students that have did that. You know, they were looking for that, you know, those shared experiences, those shared interests, like that amazing WhatsApp group that's probably going to come in super clutch in the long run. And you know, you kind of never know what the Red community builds even outside of Red, or honestly, for that matter, really any boot camp or kind of alternative education in that case.
That's really interesting. I mean, like, there are a lot of tech meetups out there. So what's the main difference? Because I mean, there's a lot of communities out there, or do you think that this is a big lack that we're experiencing in Vancouver and Toronto?
I think people, I think it's just a tougher sell. I think for a lot of people, the way that you are like conditioned in your upbringing and the way that you approach formalized education, a lot of the like just the preconceived notions that we have are like, this is a normal way to go and meet people. And if you happen to meet people in class, you're not like, no, I don't want to stigmatize it, but like, you're not a weirdo. And I think people approach it in a similar way. I think it's easier to talk about it in terms of dating.
Okay.
If you are going to take a cooking class with the, or going to a gym class with the intent to pick somebody up, that is probably going to be received poorly by the majority of the people in the room if you make your intentions known, right?
Right.
Now, there's a reason so many like romances and stuff actually happen in the workplace, and people who say, oh, I went to school with this person. Oh, I went to work with this person. Like, how many people do you know that were married? Other than dating apps where you're both on the same page. But I think that like alignment of intent between two parties is what makes it organic. You have to be on the same page one way or the other. So in an educational environment, I think both people are there to just learn their own stuff, and the whole class, sorry, not both. I'm trying to get away from the romantic part metaphor, but the student body, I guess, like they're not coming in like, oh, I can't wait to make a bunch of friends here. Like, they're coming in like, I can't wait to work really hard, I hope. And if they weren't expecting that, they did. And that's why some of the relationships come out so organically as friendships in most cases. But also, actually, there have been a couple of like Red romances that I've heard of in the past. I think a few people are still together, which is cute and sweet and nice to think about. Whereas when you look at like, I've been not heavily involved, but I'd say I did frequently attend like tech meetups and like marketing events, both in Toronto and in Vancouver. And for the most part, I think it's too short of an interaction to get past the service level talk in most cases.
Right.
I think if two people can, I 100% think you can. I just don't think it's the norm. I don't think that out of 10 people who regularly attend like a tech meetup, that 8 of them will be friends. In a 3-month bootcamp program, and I'll chalk it up to any other academic institution, like in a high school class, like out of 30 kids, probably 26 will be friends. So for whatever reason, it seems to trend that way. And that's where I think there's like a little bit of a disconnect. I always encourage the heck out of every student to go to these events, to meet people, to network.
Right.
They always seem to have a lot of trouble, especially when that was like their goal, to actually make meaningful connections that way. It can be done. It's just for some reason, a lot of people feel uncomfortable or don't feel confident. Whereas when you're on playing ground, right? We're all just like, oh, we're all just struggling to learn Google Analytics together. Goddamn. You just become friends so easily, because how do you not have, you know, a beer or whatever if you don't drink, you know, and talk about how annoying that lesson was and, oh, we hate the instructor, blah, blah, blah. Not that you always do, but yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you're right. And like Leo said, it's that shared experience where you're trying to like reach a certain goal together, or at least experience it together. Okay, that's good. Yeah, that's something we're trying to always foster at Collab Collective. But I'm curious if that would still be possible now that we're kind of like in a remote environment where everyone's on Zoom, or, you know, meeting in person's like, that's what really creates that like space for serendipity. And yeah, I wonder if it's a lot harder to do now that we're all like digital.
Yeah, I'm gonna jump in for that one, just because I know, Chris, your classroom, so your teaching experience is a little bit more traditional in the sense of in the classroom, but I was graced with being teaching fully remote right in the thick of things in March. I think I told you I was teaching over at York University, so I picked up a class over there and I was doing a sessional instruction. And just to get back to your point, Josh, like it is different and it is hard and it's not easy at all. But I mean, I know this is a little bit of a byproduct of like just COVID in general, but you know, one of the things that my class was bonding over, and this again was like right in the beginning around like March, early April, was know, kind of the crazy situation in the world and like, hey, is everyone okay? Like, is everyone kind of safe? You know, a lot of the students were kind of offering like a helping hand, which was great in the beginning. I had more than one student say like, hey, I have a ton of toilet paper. If anyone needs it, like send me a DM and I'll hook you up, which is awesome. But I think, you know, in a lot of ways, the experience is different and it's hard to kind of, you know, see yourself in that, you know, unforeseeable kind of situation. But I think for a lot of people, it's not going to be the same at all. You know, there's a lot of extroverts out there that need that thrive in those environments. And on that same note, like there's a lot of introverts that really thrive in this environment. Like they're in that safe space. They're, you know, they got their favorite headphones on, they're in a chair, they got their like water nearby, which is, I think, huge for a lot of people. So in a lot of ways, it's like a little bit of a happy medium. But, you know, I think one of the reasons why, and again, there's tons of reasons why Red kind of went down the drain, but I think one of the biggest ones is like, we were not equipped for remote at all. And we didn't want to be. And, you know, at the first week, essentially, they kind of forced it on us, like, hey, you know, stuff's going kind of down in Toronto, like, let's try to get some Zoom accounts, which kind of never happened. Like, do what you can on Slack, call your students if you have to. And, you know, right away, it was just so much of a shock because we weren't equipped for that. And I don't think the program was ever intended to be conducted in that way. You know, we were very much about those classroom experiences, very much about like, you know, we couldn't figure something out. I would quickly like grab you and your laptop and like, hey, let's go bang this one out in the kitchen in front of the whiteboard, and we're not leaving until it's done. Like, it's very hard to do those things. And don't get me wrong, I've done it successfully. It's my teaching my second round over at York now. But it's different. I have to adapt. Like, you know, I conduct a lot of polls, for example, because it just gives some of those students who are a little bit shyer, like at least a little bit of an opportunity to give their voice. I do a lot of like, you know, thumbs up if you want to hear this and thumbs down if you want to hear that type of thing. So I feel like a little bit of a YouTube streamer, but it's different. And in a lot of ways, you know, I don't necessarily like want it to be the same. I think it's cool because you can have like a lot larger of a reach, for example. So like at Red, and again, Chris's class was always a little bit larger, but like not by much, somewhere between like 6 to like maybe 12, 14, I think at most. What you have, Chris, almost 20?
Yeah, in that range.
Yeah, somewhere around there. Like it's a lot to manage that in person. But, you know, for example, I'm teaching 40 students at York over on Zoom, and it's some days are pretty easy. Like, I'm not going to lie, like, because half of them, you know, just kind of tuning in, just watching me like their, you know, their weekly show. And, you know, they have a few handful that are super engaged, and then quite a few of them that are more comfortable in the chat, for example, and not necessarily like flipping on their camera, which, so I think it opens a lot of doors for a lot of people, but it's different. You know, I wish I had that in-person experience that I'm far more comfortable with, but at the same time, I think as instructors, at least, and, you know, Chris, I'm sure you'll be the same way if you ever get back in front of a classroom again, you need to adapt to the situation and need to be able to, you know, kind of be fluid. And it's something I kind of talked about over in the last podcast, but I think that's something that just comes with the nature of, like, you know, being an educator. You know, you if you don't, you kind of, you know, you rust. You're just not learning new skills, right?
100%. And there, yeah, definitely, like, on the teaching side, there's for sure challenges associated with that. And now I'm empathetic to that. Like, that feels like a challenge. We had only a tiny taste of that in Vancouver. We had, there was, I think, a couple of snow days where we had to resort to that. And it was a scramble to just try to figure out how to do it on the spot. Yeah, there was no plan beforehand. That was never in the cards. Yeah, huge snowstorm. You know, we were in Vancouver, so probably had at least, gosh, like 3-4 centimeters. Whole city just shut down. And that's a joke. If anyone's from BC, you know, it doesn't snow very often.
It's a different type of snow.
Yeah. It's a different type of snow. It kind of melts before it hits the ground. But in terms of the student experience and like how people connect, and even now for just, you know, meetups and the whole kind of like tech community, like, how do people get to know each other if you can't meet in real life? I think Leo touched on it really well. Different personality types kind of favor different things. I remember when we had sort of both happening simultaneously, right? Like, you're going to class every day, you had your students come to class, and then you also had that Slack group or that WhatsApp or whatever, and people are kind of chatting there as well. It's funny because there's, you know, students who are personality type that will not speak up in like a group outing, like don't feel comfortable, kind of like they're not going to try to be obnoxious or whatever. Others who love to play that role. but those same students who aren't as maybe forthcoming personally, you know, in person in the WhatsApp group are like dropping the best memes, like making the dirtiest jokes, and everyone's like, whoa, like, I didn't know this side of you. And you kind of like there, you get to know each other a little bit more that way. But yeah, I think that always that helped everyone have an opportunity, because you had kind of the best of both worlds in that sense, right? And we're learning to communicate more and more digitally, and now we're kind of stuck doing just that. And it's a lot about, I think, intention setting to make that a priority, because it, yes, it'll happen organically over time, but if that's your goal, like, there are ways to be intentional about it, and I think bring people together in a way that is formalized but not overly structured. I think every organization that is trying to build a community right now should, for if you know, have to give like just a ratio, like for every two or three like informative webinars, like teaching people about whatever, if you're a dog food company, you're teaching people about dog training, like your every third or fourth webinar thing, event, whatever, Eventbrite, I don't know how you do it, that you're doing, should just be like, okay, but today we're just going to play Jackbox games or Among Us or something, and we're not going to talk about dogs at all, because you're all fully realized people with, you know, a whole range of interests and emotions, and maybe we'll explore those for like half an hour, and you'll find people will kind of naturally gel with each other. And it won't happen by accident. I think that's the only thing I would say.
So what do you think personally? Have you been liking the new adjustment, or do you hate it? Are you kind of in between?
Oh my God, I'm dying. Like, I need people, man. I like I said, we moved into a bigger apartment, and that was just because of the way that things worked out.
Mm-hmm.
So we very intentionally put ourselves in like a neighborhood where there are more like street level businesses and things like that. So that you, if you need to go pick up, like, you know, I could go pick up, and obviously with the state of things now in Ontario, that's not really, we're trying to avoid that more, but just to have like the minimum exposure to go to just go for a walk. Like, it wasn't really about going into a restaurant ever. That was never the important part. It was just, can I go just
move the body? Hey?
Can I just write? Can I just walk down the street and just like make eye contact with people, which in Toronto is already weird. But like, just force that half a second of eye contact in to go, okay, yeah, I'm still here. Like,
very cold. We're very cold over here, I've been told.
Is that right?
Okay. So Chris, I want to get your take on, like, obviously you're probably one of the very few, if not probably the only person who've taught both at Vancouver and Toronto campuses. Like, what was your experience like with the difference between the two cities?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So first thing I want to say, like, on record, students really got the same experience at the end of the day. Maybe like the field trips were different, or the client projects were like, I guess, just varied as well. You probably had fewer instructors. They probably had less support. But at the end of the day, by any metric that I could evaluate it, the students in all programs at both schools got essentially the same product that they paid for. Really the same. The same, like the outcomes were very similar. And it was all aligned. The big difference was in Toronto, the people delivering that were so stretched. So much so that Leo, like, I don't even think you realized it, because you just got so comfortable being uncomfortable. It's all I knew. Whereas, you know, in Vancouver, like, oh, there's for the staff, oh, there's like a party planning committee, and like, oh, who's going to plan the students' graduation? Oh, there's somebody will do that. And the instructors don't need to worry about that. Whereas the instructors doing everything here, or was doing everything in Toronto. So that was like the biggest thing that was like glaring to me, kind of going between the schools. But as far as everything else, even like access to, I don't know, like funds for this and that, like, yeah, I know, it was similar. I'd say there were events held at the Vancouver campus after hours more frequently, which is like a cool opportunity to sort of, as a student, be like kind of hosting an external event. Do you know what I mean? Though you are still an attendee, like, it is kind of like on your home turf. So that makes for a unique experience. So maybe that's like one add-on. But besides that, like, it was pretty par.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I remember those, Friday, like, beer nights or something? I forgot what those are called. So they didn't really exist too much in Toronto?
Well, I mean, they did in, you know, nothing compared to the rumors I heard over in Vancouver, that's for sure. But, I mean, like, we definitely still spent some time around the keg. But I think the difference was You know, like we kind of talked about this last podcast, like we were kind of split. Like, you know, we had the campus team and then the kind of operations team. So we didn't really have that same kind of vibe, at least even with the staff. Like it was kind of like, hey, come over to Red. Like we need to kind of fill the room with some bodies. We're hosting a little bit of an event or just having like a Friday social, like, you know, come play some puzzles with the students or something, or like come play Jenga, whatever it may be. So, you know, I feel like in a lot of ways it sucks because, you know, I heard all these awesome stories from Chris and the Vancouver team, but in the same way, like it was kind of all I knew. So, you know, we definitely did have some fun and we did have far fewer events, but, you know, we still made the best of a situation. And like Chris said, like we were kind of stretched thin. And that's something that was the case, I would like to say, like throughout my whole experience at Red. But at the same time, it was kind of the best experience because, you know, it's kind of what you ask for when you're working in, you know, kind of the startup world. And it's in a lot of cases to be expected. And a lot of cases, it's kind of the experience I wanted.
Awesome. What was like the culture like Vancouver, like people in Vancouver compared to Toronto? Even if you like compare maybe the clients and yeah, I guess with the students as well.
Team and yeah, okay. So if we're looking at kind of overall, yeah, I think that there was a little bit more of like a comfort between people to kind of to hang around after, stick around for the Friday social. Like there was more of a, yeah, it seemed like a bigger draw.
Okay.
And Toronto, I don't know, maybe it's because a lot of people were kind of commuting from a lot further. It was a lot more like a commuter scene into downtown Toronto than Vancouver. Like, gotcha. And there were definitely a few people who were like driving in from Poco and things like that. But, you know, I know a good chunk of people were sort of within like busing or, you know, transit distance and things like that. So I don't know, for whatever reason, like people stuck around, were happy to stick around, like didn't feel like obligated to leave right away. Toronto, you know, it's that East Coast kind of city vibe, not East Coast, but whatever, like Eastern part of the country city vibe. People are, it's the hustle and bustle. You're like ready to leave the minute you can.
Okay.
That's just part of the, I think the greater culture of the city.
Yeah. We had a lot of get in, get out type of attitudes.
It's true, but it's like with the team that was there, you know, everyone did, I think, their best to play a part in making it an environment that people wanted to stick around for. At the same time, not everybody is kind of into the same things, right? I think a lot of people are interested in playing some like low stakes board games and, you know, connecting with each other that way. I'm kind of like in a sort of strategic, I don't know, like playful level, you know, other people are happy to just drain a keg. And of course we had like rules around that because school at the end of the day, but you know, they'll play a game of beer pong or something. And, you know, we're more comfortable doing that. I think because it was just a larger campus, your probability of meeting at least a small pocket of people who shared whatever kind of your bonding method was, was higher. Whereas in Toronto, you know, if your class is six people and four of them all want to drink beer and you're that person who's not, or vice versa, and it was often actually the opposite, the inverse of that, you know, you kind of felt like, okay, well then this is for me and I won't stick around, which is totally fair. And I think we in a way, because the networking in the community was such a huge important component of it, and for me so much of like the real outcome and the value, maybe we let those people down, right? I think that's very much the case.
Okay, cool. So I asked this question, I put Leo on the spot when I interviewed him, but I guess it'd be fair to do it to you. But if you were to summarize your whole experience at Red, say, like, you know, in three words, what would it be?
No pressure.
Be descriptive words.
Like in sequence?
No, it doesn't matter.
That's how I'm going to do it. Oh. I would say like formative, valuable, and then disaster.
You are definitely a marketer.
Yeah.
Could you unpack that a little bit?
Totally. The first two I think we talked about.
Yeah.
It was formative for me. It was a huge touchstone in terms of like getting my career where I want it to be. The job that I'm doing now, like I couldn't possibly be doing if I had not taken, you know, at least some sort of fundamental UX course, right? Like it was a huge paradigm shift for me to just be exposed to the kind of environment that like our sort of the way the different points of the curriculums aligned with each other and some of the overlap that they shared, like, oh my gosh, it progressed. Honestly, I think it fast-tracked my career, like, no joke, like 5 years.
Wow.
Just having instructed in that environment. And that's like, I'm probably closer to understating that than exaggerating. In the, I suppose the second thing, valuable was, yeah, we talked a lot about that. I think everybody got some kind of value out of it, came with the right mindset. And disaster was just the tail end of it, man. Like, I don't care. I don't know if we signed something or whatever. Like, I don't give a shit. It was embarrassing. It was embarrassing at the end. It was embarrassing to be a part of. It was embarrassing to come to work. It was embarrassing. And I know, Leo, for you, is very much like student facing. On the commercial side, it was even more embarrassing to have. Okay, I'm someone's gonna like just rip me a new one who was closer to the business for much longer than I was, because I was only on that end of things for a short while towards the end. It was okay. Only several months. It was just like a mismanagement in a lot of cases of things, where there were, I think, impossible goals set with sometimes not like a realistic roadmap, and things falling apart at a rate that was like impossible to keep up with. Like, it was an impossible challenge, and people were regularly burning out, just trying to like keep up with the ambitiousness of like the mess that was being created at the end. That's really what it was. Like phone calls from creditors and you know, that's kind of whatever, because I think most businesses deal with that to a degree. And if you're in finance, like, okay, I feel for you. Like, that's a somewhat routine thing, depending on the scale of your organization. But the worst was like when you have students calling in saying, hey, I referred my friend like a year ago, and I just want, whatever, you know, it was like a referral fee that you could sign up for. If your friend takes the course, you get like $500.
Yeah.
Or people who are asking for refunds, and you're just like putting it off and putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And all of that I could completely be, you know, come to terms with and accept for like a greater good. And I'm a team player, and I'm sounding really sour, but for this particular topic, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna be real. It got to the point where there was just no transparency within the organization. It was like from the senior leadership team to just like the whatever, if you call it middle management or just like the operational side of that part of the business, huge barriers, complete lack of visibility on so many things. And then between that and like the campus side, especially in Toronto, like another layer of just like obscurity. And then the students are just completely in the dark. I think Leo mentioned, I did listen to the last episode about, you know, students not being able to get into the classroom cases, right?
There's some forced cases, that's for sure. Yeah. And it's not easy at all. And like, you got to put on this happy face, and, you know, it sucks because Chris and I can both attest to this, like, you know, our hearts were kind of broken, and this thing that we believed in. I mean, I, in a lot of ways, still kind of did, and still appreciate the experience I got out of it, but it's not easy to do that. And it's a shame, but, you know, like Agnes kind of said more than once, like, it's not, you know, a unique situation by any means. You know, it is something that happens. It is something that you kind of have in the back of your mind when you're working for a startup. But I think Chris summed it up, you know, really well. Like, in a lot of ways, it was embarrassing, and it wasn't what, you know, we deserved in a lot of ways. And it definitely, you know, shouldn't have been something that ever trickled down to the students. And we did our best to kind of, you know, shelter them like a mother goose. But, you know, in a lot of ways, we were just as defeated as they were in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And for in terms of sheltering the students, and I think in a sense, that's the one area where I think agree in many cases of the strategy of like the communication strategy there, because you don't need to create a tremendous distraction for people, right? Especially when there were so many sort of there were so many plan B's. We got to G at least in terms of how things were going to be reorganized and realigned, and, you know, who was going to save us towards the end. It was like really just the rhetoric of internally. Trying to just like let the students get as much out of the course as they could while they were still there, that last cohort especially, I think made sense. But people who like have been in and out of the program, like alumni who are looking for, you know, if they're trying to claim some, especially if it's, you know, fiscally related, trying to get into communication with somebody and there's nobody to take their call, like that sucks. Like, we let somebody down. And the thing that was such a waste and such a shame for me personally to see happen firsthand was because of the levels of obscurity of the truth, really, between the staff, was that we had the, I completely believe this in my heart of hearts, like we had the people in the buildings to solve the problems we were facing. We did, but they never had the chance. They were never put in a room together and asked, how can we do this? It was a select group of people that were just carrying that whole weight. And frankly, it was an impossible task and was unfair to them. And I feel for every one of those people. And I'm, you know, still in touch with a few and friends, but damn, like it was avoidable. Like I think to a degree, right? Disaster.
Did you, you talked about burnout, like did you experience burnout? Like how did you?
Oh man. That? Yes, absolutely.
Did you just like, you know, had other people to, you know, go through it together? Like it must have been a really tough time.
Oh my gosh, yeah. The instructors I know were so close in the unit that was there, having to be in the other building, which was really like down the street, but felt so separate, like Leo said, with a new team, like really quickly, like I was in a hyperbolic sort of situation of making connections with my team on the marketing side, where like we saw doom and gloom like staring us in the face, and you just had to like tough it out with people. And in that sense, I think I hope everyone was supported. No one comes to mind that was like completely at it alone, because there was a real sense of camaraderie, and that's like any startup, right? Where there's going to be highs and lows, there's going to be like investment rounds that fall through and stuff like that. That, you know, sometimes you got to make hard decisions, and you if you can't lean on each other, like you really have nothing. The shame of it was like sometimes I wished like that we were like an e-commerce company or something, and we were having this like terrible time, and the only people that were going to suffer because of it are like a handful of people who are going to get their returns in too late when we close the doors. But that wasn't the case, right? It was a long reaching network of students who put their trust in a community of people, whether or not that was a business. And it's so much harder to let a body of students down than a handful of customers, though. I think a lot of people feel very strongly about that as well. So.
Yeah, I remember Agnes talking about that. Like, it's a school, it's an educational place, right? So it's different from a like customer base. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. So what kind of, like, can you share? Did you learn any lessons or like spin something positive out of that whole thing? Like, how did you transition out of it? Because like it sounds like one of the biggest thing is the lack of communication. So I guess going forward, I guess more transparency, right? But what other lessons do you think you learned out of that?
Oh yeah, first and foremost, nothing even comes close to that in terms of like the biggest lessons I learned. I think especially coming from the instructional side, I think really one of my weaknesses as an instructor, frankly, I thought I was a pretty good instructor, but one of my weaknesses was delivering harsh feedback. I was the one to I'd like make it a compliment sandwich or find a way to like, what's a euphemism for this sucks? Like, how do I, you know what I mean? But that direct feedback is what's gonna allow you to take action in the most timely manner, right?
In some cases,
you know somebody a little bit, and you can kind of fish out of them, is this a person who can like take that kind of feedback? Mm-hmm. But for me, since Red, after seeing such like a beautiful, amazing, like really like pure thing completely collapsed because of a lack of communication. Mm-hmm. Like my next job, and I've been through two jobs since.
Okay.
Well, I'm now in a second role coming after since Red. But immediately in that next job, I was like, I'm not bullshitting anyone ever again. Like it's just, everything's going to be not so blunt that I'm rude, but everything's going to be straight up. Everything's going to be, a little more cut and dry. And, yeah, like I said, that was definitely a weakness of mine. And I'm like, well, we can't let that happen again. So.
Okay, gotcha. And like coming out of that, did you take some time just to like recover and rest? Like how was it transitioning to the next job?
Oh, Yeah, Leo, I don't know what your experience was exactly, but for me, like, I couldn't afford to. I went straight into, okay, I'm going to update my portfolio. I'm going to quickly scramble to try to take on a couple of projects. Instructing full time, it's tough to do it work on the side. And so the biggest challenge for me starting to interview for jobs was people going, okay, so you were instructing, but like, did you do marketing? I said, oh, yes, every time I had to basically sell the class all over again or the program to every HR person and say, but you don't understand. Like, it wasn't a classroom. It was, we were like an agency. We operated, we had clients, we had projects, it was hands-on. We were running ad campaigns, and like reporting on the performance of those campaigns. Like, we did the market research, we built the whole brand every single quarter in my classroom. We were obsessed with making it that way. But people are like, oh, that doesn't really sound, it sounds like you just taught a course, so did you do this or not? So that was definitely a challenge for me, and I found myself, I hauled ass, and within a couple months was you know, back in a role, and somebody was nice enough to give me a job, and despite the fact that we were pretty early in COVID. So I know that wasn't the case for a lot of people. So I'm so grateful. I felt like the luckiest guy in the world to land that job after the lockdown happened. So the timing was bad. I ended up actually just telling a lot of people that, so what happened at your last role? I didn't want to be like, we went belly up and it sucked. The story just got so long-winded.
Right.
Just turned into, you guys know COVID. And they were like, cool, next question. And I was like, oh, this is more efficient, actually. Well, I'll do it this way.
In a lot of ways, we definitely could leverage that, like, you know what happened, March happened, so it sucked for all of us, that's for sure. And like, you know, like you said, Chris, like, I mean, I couldn't have necessarily afford to, like, you know, not be on the job hunt right away, and I did a lot of the same things, but like, it's hard, and it's hard to explain, like, you know, what we did without having, you know, that website and it's all its glory just there as like our kind of, you know, this was red, this is what we did, this is what we were doing, these are the projects that we work on. And I think in a lot of ways, you're right, like, I kind of had to sell it. And it became increasingly harder to do that when there wasn't anything back in it.
Mm-hmm. It's so, yeah, at some point, and so many students, I feel for every single student, anyone who's went to Red, like, even if you didn't, if I never met you, I will some way, somehow write you some kind of recommendation letter, I swear, because I feel a tremendous responsibility. Having experienced that for firsthand, Leo, and us being as instructors, like, having a senior level of work experience to fall back on, even if that's the case, so many people put all their eggs in that basket as a launching point for their career. And now that same experience of, okay, so what's your background? Oh, I went to school. I took this UX program. Cool. Where was it? Red. There's no website. There's just a single page, really vague, painful to read, like, cringy PDF document currently being hosted on that domain. So I really don't even know what this whole Red thing was. And the student has to sell it. And I'm like, that's not fair. The student's trying to still, like, develop, or that recent alum, whoever that, you know, this, like, person I'm making up, but there's dozens of you. And I, if you're listening, like, we feel for you. Like, we think about you every day. We do, really. How can you sell that when you're still trying to, like, build your own confidence around the skills you just applied and learned? It's unfair.
Yeah. Do you know, like, some of your previous students, like, how did they bounce from, how do you recover from that? I know that's something for us, like, we tried to create, like, a job board just to help people out, but yeah, it's pretty tough.
I mean, I feel like we kind of talked about just a little before, like, you know, were there those students that could have kind of learned this on their own, and, you know, where would they have been? And I think in a lot of ways they were kind of forced into that situation. So, you know, they could have had those skills already, but I think, you know, Red in a lot of ways was that security blanket, and it kind of had it, you know, ripped away from them. So, you know, I'm not going to say that they weren't resilient, because I have tons of students who, you know, picked up work pretty shortly after, you know, just kept going as much as they can, as much as they could, really. But it's tough to say, because, like, you know, I had some specific examples where I had students who actually got, and I hate to say this because it makes me so sad, but they got deported. Because they couldn't land anything in time. And he was actually one of my most talented students. He was a friggin' footwear designer for Adidas before he came to Toronto and wanted to kind of pivot into UX. fantastic individual, like still talk to him all the time, but and he's doing everything he can to get back here. Obviously, you know, COVID kind of pulled the plug on a lot of things, but he had all his eggs in our basket, and it sucks to just have that in the back of my head. And in a lot of ways, I feel responsible, but for those same reasons is, you know, that like-minded approach from Chris, like I will write anyone a reference, because I know if you came through our program, you showed, you know, perseverance and resilience, and, you know, you're able to absorb and learn new things, and, you know, jump on a call with me for any students listening and talk it out. And if I can help in any way I can, I'll be there, because I think that just comes with the territory.
Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing, guys. I think this is probably our longest episode. We're wrapping up over an hour. Is there anything that you want to share, like doing any like side hustles or projects that you want to share or give a shout out to some former Red staff? Any final words?
Yeah, I'll give my plug away. If the place where you're working right now, whether it's a big team or a small team, if they are just in the same boat as I am, where you're like, what the hell do you do for like a Christmas party when there's no party? My brother actually is very much affected by the COVID lockdowns, and is actually quite a talented mixologist in like the Toronto cocktail scene. And he's kind of pivoted his whole work experience because there's nowhere to bartend. Into a small business called Harp and Hawthorne, harpandhawthorne.com. And it's just like virtual mixology lessons for big teams. So it seems like something that he cooked up recently that I've been kind of working on the side, and generating tons of interest, particularly from like enterprise corporate businesses that are trying to figure out what to do with their holiday party budget when there's nowhere to take your staff. So I don't know if anyone seems to have like a close friend in HR or on the party planning committee or whatever, harpandhawthorne.com. Check it out.
Nice. Can attest to that one. We actually had the pleasure of working with Peter over at Red. It was a really fun
experience. Yeah.
we made some awesome things for him, actually. I don't know if it ever went to fruition, but like a really great website with a whole UI UX process and a little bit of a rebrand. So I think he's a perfect example of like some of the, you know, the resilience some of our students need to kind of strive for, and being able to pivot, because that's exactly what he did. Like, you know, he went from taking, you know, a milk crate full of tons of drinks and spirits and turning, you know, into a little show. But, you know, I really do feel for, you know, people making the best of it, especially with all the COVID creativity. You know, maybe that's the name of like another segment on Collab Collective, but I feel like a lot of good also came out of this in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and I forgot that he actually was a client project when he was first cooking up the idea for the design classes in Toronto and the dev class as well. So that's actually, I'm glad you said that, because I forgot, and it's actually a much better tie-in than I gave.
Yeah, I'll send you that link, Josh. It's actually a really great project.
The work was amazing that the students did for this project, and I'd say this compared to what they had designed and what we were able to realize. I'd say that website's flying at about half mast right now, but right. But he is live and he's operational. And honestly, I don't think he could have done it without your students. So
awesome. If people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way?
DM me a cold message on LinkedIn. Don't introduce yourself. Just ask me immediately. I'm being so sarcastic. No. You can,
or do you actually, not?
I have like my portfolio site is probably like a good way, unless you go to my Instagram, which I think is maybe too much, but chriskovalevsky.com.
Okay, awesome. That's how you say it. Sorry about that. I was saying it the wrong way.
Did you? I didn't even notice.
Okay, awesome. Well, thanks so much for your time, Chris, Leal. It's been awesome. If you guys have any questions and want to reach out to them, DM us or I'll put all the contact information in the description. And give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. So have a lovely day, and I'll see you guys on the next episode.